You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
We've been looking at the UN off and on the last couple of weeks. We had the Universal Periodic Review, which Malaysia had to make a report to the international body. Now I want to bring a story about what happened yesterday at the 68th UN General Assembly. Now, the Assembly often is posed with resolutions, and they pass resolutions on various things or don't pass them. But what happened yesterday was a resolution that's been put to the General Assembly for the last 22 years. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Malaysia has supported. And that is a resolution to end the five-decade-long embargo, economic and financial embargo, against the state of Cuba. And when you start, you actually look at some of the stats, David, you know, you see how initially there were... it was kind of evenly kind of distributed, the people for it, against it, and absent people who abstained, rather not people, but states who abstained.
It's one of the relics from the Cold War period, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah? But yesterday, and for a number of years now, some 188 countries voted for the resolution for the end of the embargo. The only countries that, of course, rejected this resolution, of course, is the United States and Israel. So the state of Israel has been a staunch supporter of the United States in its policy against Cuba since the very beginning of this resolution, some 22 years ago. Interestingly, China's deputy UN ambassador, Wan Ming, called on the international community to make its position very clear to the U.S. and demanded that the U.S. government change its policy towards Cuba. Now, I spoke to Madame Yanela Reyes-Parret, who is the charge d'affaires at the Embassy of Cuba, about the embargo.
When Obama was candidate for the presidency of the United States of America, everybody think that he can change the relation between Cuba and USA. But really, the Obama government continues the aggression against Cuba. Basically, the economic, commercial, and financial blockade against our country and the Cuban people. Let me tell you some information about blockade. For example, Cuba cannot trade freely with USA and with any other country. Cuba cannot use the US dollar in international financial transactions. It is not possible for the blockade. Cuba cannot account in US dollar in third country bank. If you want to transfer some money from Cuba, you need to use a third country. But if you transfer directly money from one country to Cuba, they cancel the transaction and they can return back this money to the person.
So actually your money gets confiscated if you try to send it to Cuba. Now,
The U.S. government?
Yes, by the U.S. government. The U.S. government has something called the Helms-Burton law, which basically allows them to punish non-American entities and countries for dealing with Cuba. So it tries to extend its powers beyond its own jurisdictions, not just simply about trading with America, it's more than that. The Cuban foreign minister gives a number, quantifies this the cost of this blockade to this tiny island nation. It's cost them over half a century now, $1.126 trillion. That's the damage it's done, according to the Cubans, to the economy. What he says is our small island poses no threat to the national security of that superpower, but the human damage caused by the economic, commercial, and financial blockade is incalculable. Mm. Now, Malaysia and Cuba, if you remember, there was a time, if you were old as me, mm-hmm. had an international passport, and one of the countries that was listed that we couldn't go to was Cuba.
Cuba, yeah.
But that relationship has changed. And now we even have a scholarship program sponsored by the Cuban government to send Malaysians to study medicine at the Latin American School of Medicine in Havana. And there are some 20 or so students on that program now. And, you know, Cuban health services are acclaimed internationally. So I asked, Madam Yanela, what it has been this changing relationship between Cuba and Malaysia?
We established diplomatic relation in 1975, but we opened the embassy of Cuba to Malaysia in 1997. after the visit of former Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir to Cuba. The bilateral relation gained a momentum from 1990. After that, we exchanged many visits at the highest level. In 2001 and 2003, Commander Fidel Castro was in Malaysia. The last trip was for the North Alignment Summit. And in 2005, our former Vice President, Raul Castro, visited Malaysia. Now, he's our actual president, Raul Castro. And the last visit from Cuba to Malaysia was 2 weeks ago, when the General Director of the Asia-Pacific Division to the Minister of Foreign Affairs visited Malaysia. He participated in many diplomatic and cultural activities here. For example, he had the opportunity to have a meeting with the Friend of Cuba Association.
Well, it's interesting about the Friend of Cuba Association. It was long helmed by none other than Mukriz Mahathir, who's now the Mantri Besar of Kedah. When Cuba went to the Universal Periodic Review to have its human rights track record put on under kind of international scrutiny, Malaysia and that Friends of Cuba Association, including Just World Trust, supported the Cuban report. The Cubans are well aware of criticisms of their political system. It's a one-party state. They're also aware of criticisms of their human rights record. So I put it to Madam Yanila, how do you defend the political system, one that is not, in fact, democratic?
Okay, I think the majority of the Cubans are agree with our system. If the majority of the Cuban people don't agree with our political system, the Cuban Revolution didn't survive. Our revolution has been development for 64 years. In front of the USA, it's not easy for us, with different ideas, with different system, mainly when the United States wanted to eliminate our revolution. For this reason, in my opinion, if the majority of the Cuban people don't agree with the political system, the Cuban Revolution didn't survive these years.
That's that's an interesting response. I mean, you might disagree, because you might say, well, how do you know the majority doesn't agree with the system unless you put it to a vote? And voting seems to be one way in which we can determine on a solid and factual basis what people want or
Correct.
Don't want. But it's also, to be fair to the Cubans, Madam Yanela, when I asked her about the human rights record, mentioned Cuba's universal healthcare system, its universal education system. That's in fact a beacon of hope in a continent where social justice is at appalling levels. This continent, Latin America, or South America, is referred to by the U.S. as its backyard. And, the U.S. has supported many dictatorships in that continent. But many of the left governments of Latin America today subject themselves to regular democratic elections, including, Venezuela. That's a bête noire of the U.S. today, much more than Cuba. At any rate, it was a very interesting discussion, because this is a country, the tiny nation state faced with a superpower.
David versus Goliath, literally.
Absolutely, the Americans, in fact, had tried to assassinate Commander Fidel Castro many times, 3 times, I believe, and they also led the Bay of Pigs invasion. So this is a country, when they say they're under attack, they've actually been under attack. Anyway, so you were listening to the Charge Affair of the Embassy of Cuba, Madam Yanila Reyes Perret, and the fight that Cuba has been engaged with against the U.S. embargo and the international support that it's garnered over the years.
BFM 89.9, the business station.